Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Joining me now, Christian Fowler, as he does every single Tuesday. Senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Check out our podcast. Usually releases on Tuesday at 10 a.m. This week, because of some power outages there in Christian's area, we're recording tonight. It will release tomorrow, Wednesday, at 10 a.m. on the Bluff Believe Podcast Network, Bluff City Media Podcast Network. Christian, how's it going?
Everything's good. And since we didn't record last night and are recording tonight, and the podcast will come out on Wednesday, this is the first time we've talked about anything that happened over the weekend. So this is,
yeah.
Typically we've already discussed things and kind of have an idea of where we're going to go and our thoughts and opinions on things. This is fully the first time we've discussed any of it.
Yes. Now 32-31, Memphis gets the win over Arkansas behind a late punch out from Chris Bracey. Who won Defensive Player of the Week in the American Conference. And then Arrington Maiden, in his one play of the game, runs for 11 yards to basically put the game on ice with a first down. I'm just going to leave this as open as possible for you to get your thoughts off. What's your reaction to the way that game played out and ultimately ended?
Well, it's crazy because we went into this and everybody's talking about the 11 a.m. ABC kickoffs for Memphis, and that Memphis is the place where some of these SEC teams come to die, and Memphis has done great against these SEC teams and all this. And I'm kind of sitting there looking at the game from 30,000-foot view and going, okay, we still don't really know what this Memphis team has, right? Like, we haven't seen them play against really any quality opponents. We thought that might have been Troy, and then Goose Crowder gets knocked out, and so that becomes a wash because we all saw what happened there. And I watched the way that Arkansas played on the road in Oxford the week before and how well Taylen Green was playing, and I was looking at it saying, I don't know if Memphis can pull this off. Like, I really was – this was the least confident of any of the big games that Memphis has had at home that I've been the last several years. Like, typically it's like, okay, I can feel pretty good about the Ole Miss game and the Mississippi State game and felt like they had chances in those games. But when I looked at this one, I went, I just don't know. I don't know if they can pull this one off. And credit to Ryan Silverfield and the staff, credit to the players, like, to go down 18 against a very dynamic quarterback and a dynamic offense, and to have the biggest comeback in all of college football this year at 18 points. Like, that shows a buy-in and a culture at Memphis that people have questioned during the Ryan Silverfield era, right? Like, I'm not saying that we're necessarily a part of that, but you've had a lot of people be like, what is the identity? What is the culture of this team? And I think we really saw it on Saturday. To be in that hole against a really quality opponent in Arkansas and to not give up, to not back down, and not to be perfect, because they weren't perfect in the second half of this game necessarily. But it's about the timely plays, right? It's about the Chris Bracey punch out. It's about the Sutton Smith 64-yard touchdown on, well, it was a third or fourth down when he broke away for that one and really flipped the momentum, or Arrington Maiden on third down just dragging the Arkansas defense with him. So it wasn't perfect for Memphis, but they made the big plays when they had to.
Like, yeah, or you didn't even bring up Cortez Brand before half to make it an 11-point game. I mean, the difference between an 11-point game and an 18-point game going into half, I can tell you from experience, it's a big, big difference, 3-score versus 2-score.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this was just a case of, honestly, a team that looked like they wanted it more than the other team. Like, just every time that a situation came up where they had to have something, Memphis answered the bell offensively and defensively. And like I said, scored touchdowns, converted third downs, made timely stops, and forced turnovers. It was a really fun game to watch overall, especially if you're a Memphis fan, because it was a roller coaster, right? Like, you come out early and you feel like, all right, we're going to hang in this. You drop down by 18, you go, all right, this one's over. And then, like you said, you get the deep shot touchdown before half, and you go, maybe there's a chance. Sutton Smith scores, then you're really getting hyped up. And then Arkansas looks like they're driving down the field to run the clock out and win the game. And you get one of the crazier defensive plays of the season so far, and that emotion goes right back up. So it was a roller coaster for Memphis fans, but you just have to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff and the team for how they overcame adversity in this game, and even in a sloppy game at times for Memphis, they overcame everything to win it. Like, that's all you can really ask for.
And what really strikes me is in that first half, obviously you go down by 18, you didn't play all that well, but they really didn't play well in the first half. And that was decision-making from the coaching staff. They had the surprise onside that didn't work out. The double pass to Sutton Smith didn't work out. It felt like Brennan Lewis was just as erratic as possible throwing the football. He had a lot of open guys in that first half, just couldn't hit them. He was sailing balls left and right. Like, they did not play well, but still there was a resolve from that roster to go get it done by any means necessary. And I think that's sort of where you tip the cap. But, like, I got to be honest, Christian, this was not a clean ball game by Memphis at all. Like, I don't think this was peak Memphis, what this team can actually accomplish this year. That there was a lot of mistakes. There was a lot of mistakes still out there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like I said, they didn't play a perfect game, but they still beat a quality opponent. And that's, like, when you're Memphis, that is one of the best things that you can ask for, because you can sit here on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the weeks leading up to the games and say, what happens if they click on all cylinders? You know, what happens if, they roll Tulane and USF and these teams and they make it to a playoff? And obviously, you're way far away from that. We're way early, but I know that's where people's thoughts are right now. And it's like, what does this team look like against a really good team when they click on all cylinders and Brendan Lewis is on and they don't have the turnovers and they don't have the mistakes? What does a perfect game from Memphis look like? But, you know, you mentioned Brendan Lewis and the way that he looked in the first half. And this is how crazy college football is and just football in general. I was sitting there watching the first half. And like you said, Brendan Lewis was missing open guys left and right. It was crazy because you saw all these opportunities that Memphis was squandering because Brendan Lewis just – he was – I don't know if it was nerves or what it was, but he just looked rattled and like he couldn't hit – anyone in the first half. And I'm sitting there thinking, do they think about going with, you know, Arrington Maiden or AJ Hill here? Like, I was legitimately considering that because I'm thinking Memphis is playing well enough to be competitive in this game and to be in this game and to have a chance to win. But Brendan Lewis is just not getting it done with his arms. And I was like, here we are. We're finally seeing the limitations of Brendan Lewis's arm and the down the field passing. And what are they going to do? Are they going to stick with this? Are they going to try to change it up? Because the coaching staff had to feel the same way as far as this is not a game we should be losing by 18. Like, we are, for the most part, now obviously there were still mistakes, but we're playing well enough to be competitive. But big time credit to Brendan Lewis for turning that around, for hitting Cortez Braham in the end zone at the end of the half and swinging the momentum, for using his legs extremely effectively in this game, not only on design runs, but on just, you know, mobility in the pocket and scrambles. He did everything that he needed to do for Memphis to win this game. Over 100 yards on the ground. The passing stats aren't necessarily going to blow you away, but it really was a tale of two halves for him. So you can do the wide view of credit Memphis and the staff and the players, but when you really zoom in, like, Brendan Lewis had to have been going through it in this game, because as a quarterback, when you have open receivers and you miss opportunities, to be able to come back from that and not let it continue throughout the game and be the reason that you
right.
lose, like, that takes a lot, and it says a lot about him and his leadership. And we know quarterbacks are really where it starts once you get past the coaching staff at the collegiate level. And to have someone like that who could have shied away, could have given up,
right.
packed it in, said we're down by 18, it's not going to happen, it's not an on day for me, and he just completely flipped it. And his resolve is a big reason why Memphis was able to win the game.
And what really strikes me about Brendan's performance, especially in that second half, is he's been through football misery, man. Nevada, Colorado with Carl Durrell. We famously have talked about it before the season. His record as a starter was 9-26 headed into this year. So, like, when you look at this game and the opportunity that was in front of him, it's by far the best atmosphere and best opportunity he has had in his college career through 5 or 6 years to show who he is as a player. And for him to have the first half he did – and to turn that around in the second half, like, that's impressive as hell. Because this is his, like, as much football as he has played, this was his first real opportunity to make a statement on who he is as a player.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's multiple players that fall
sure.
into that.
Sutton
category.
Smith, like, yep, I think, could fit there.
That's exactly where I wanted to go next, because how many off seasons now have we talked about Sutton Smith and hyped him up from the things that we've heard from the coaching staff, the things that we've, you know, seen in practice? Like, we have constantly beat the drum of Sutton Smith is going to be a difference maker for this team. He's a home run threat. He's a big play waiting to happen. And whether it was lack of opportunity or injury, it just hasn't come to fruition for him yet. You know, 2 years ago, we really thought he'd have a role. And Blake Watson came on and was amazing. And then last year it was like, all right, he has to have a role on this offense for them to be successful, and he gets injured. This year we're kind of going in the same way, right? Like, we know they have Greg DeRozier, who was successful towards the end of last year, and a couple of other guys, Makari Bodyford and Frank Pizan, that we felt could contribute. But it was like Sutton Smith is the guy, and he has just been incredible, right? He has completely proven that he is still the, you know, the big play threat, the home run hitter. Even after the injury, he's come back and been the spark of this offense. When they need a big play, when they need a big run, he's just constantly been there. And in this game, the 64-yard touchdown, it showed you everything you need to know about him. It's kind of a weird broken play, a bad
right.
mesh between him and Brendan Lewis. In a really big situation.
I don't know if you can call it a bad mesh after you saw the results, though. A great mesh.
Yeah, no. If it works, it works. You
right.
know, nothing can be considered too bad if it works. But just to see him get to the outside and then outrun the entire Arkansas defense, you go, that has to be sweet for him. And anyone who's like a true lifelong diehard Memphis fan has to feel good for him to finally get these moments to, you know, to prove himself and to prove everybody that complimented him and hyped him up, to prove everybody right, to prove himself right. Like, it just, there's so many of those little storylines that you can go pick out, but for me, like, you break it down to Brendan Lewis and Sutton Smith, those two guys, Memphis is going to go as they go, and they came up big in this game, and it's such a cool moment when you can look and go, okay, that's finally the moment for those guys when they can announce their arrival, because you can do it against Troy and all these other small teams that at the end of the day, no one's going to remember what you did in those games, regardless of how incredible it was. But when you do it on this stage, you do it on national television against the SEC opponent, like, those are the legendary moments that live throughout the history of a program. And it's really cool to see those guys do what they're doing right now.
All right. Now I'm going to call us out. Not only did we sort of think it was going to be a little bit too much to bottle up Talen Green, and they figured it out as the game went along, but we talked about the Memphis offense and we said, okay, you're going against an SEC caliber defense. The front seven is massive. They have a 389 pound D tackle. So running the ball, you know, maybe you're going to have to stretch the field a little bit more. And they did that at times. You know, Marcelo Bussey had a 40-yard catch, and Bram, of course, before half had the 38-yard touchdown, and Brady Klus had a 20-yard reception. So they did a little bit of that throughout the game. But the rock was run at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. They finished with 41 carries, 290 yards, 7.1 average, 3 touchdowns on the ground, including the 64-yard go-ahead touchdown from Sutton Smith. How surprised were you by how effective their run game was against an SEC opponent?
I mean, it was shocking, honestly. Like, okay, we know, and we said it all offseason, this Memphis team is going to have to run the ball to be successful. Because, I mean, call a spade a spade. Like, Brendan Lewis isn't the most polished passer in the country. He's a better runner than he is passer. And that's not to say he's a bad thrower of the ball. It's just his strength is his running game. So we knew with Sutton and Greg and the other running backs that I mentioned – and Brendan Lewis, like, this offense was going to go as the running game did. So if you're going to knock off an SEC opponent or, you know, a big-time opponent in the American, running the ball is going to be the biggest key. And is Arkansas some vaunted SEC defense? No. And I know that's what people that hate, like, that's going to be their response. Is it was against Arkansas, it wasn't against one of these great defenses. All right, let's peel back the layers on that real quick, first of all. Like, the level that Arkansas and Memphis recruit at are completely different ball games.
Absolutely.
And I know, like, that sucks for some Memphis fans to hear, but it's the truth. At the end of the day, SEC schools are recruiting a completely different caliber of player than a team in the American. And that's just the way that it is. It's the way it's always been, and it's even more.
And listen,
so now.
And worth mentioning, Memphis has done their darndest to catch up. There's no doubt about it. But I agree with you. It's a fact of life that a team in the SEC is recruiting a different caliber of player, unless you're talking about Vanderbilt, right? Like, that's the only difference.
Right, and that is not a shot on Ryan and this coaching staff for their recruiting, because their recruiting is about as good as it can be at this level. It's just, like you said, it is a fact of life that Arkansas recruits a different caliber of player than Memphis. So when people see an SEC school go up against a non-power four school, much like Florida and USF, you can say whatever you want about Florida, they still recruit at a much higher level than South Florida. So the expectation is when those two teams play, when an SEC team or Big Ten team or fill in the blank plays a non-power four team, the expectation is that they roll them in the trenches, that their defensive line is too much to handle, that their offensive line overwhelms the non-power four school's defensive line, and they're able to run the ball and stop the run. That was not the case. Memphis, like you said, 7 yards a carry on 41 carries for a non-power four school against an SEC school is absurd. 200-plus yard rushers with Sutton Smith and Brendan Lewis. Like, Memphis had their way up front with Arkansas. I don't care where they rank in the SEC. They're still better up front than any team Memphis is going to see all year just because of the size and caliber of player that they have. So people can tear it down all they want to and try to poke holes in it, but at the end of the day, like, that was the most impressive thing about this game, because it was like, okay, going into it, you kind of think Memphis is going to have to pick and choose their spots. They're going to have to hit some big plays here and there in the running game just to keep the defense honest, but it wasn't that at all. It was, we can line up and just run the ball right at you and have success for – over 7 yards a carry. So that goes into just game planning in general,
right?
And having an offensive staff that schemes up the run game well, that understands, you know, matchups and double teams and the different kind of blocking schemes, and then just the will of the players to say, look, I don't care if we're outgained by an average of 20 pounds up front. Like, we're going to do our jobs. We're going to do it well. It's been a staple at Memphis for the majority of the success that they've had over the last decade or so. A small, undersized offensive lineman, it hasn't mattered. Memphis has been successful up front. And obviously it's been under Fuente, Norvell, and Silverfield, but there's similarities between each. So
you can
be negative all you want, but this was a masterclass up front for Memphis.
And what fired me up is the different schemes they were running out there that they hadn't shown all year. Because there was some questions about, okay, if you're going to show these for the first time against Arkansas, how do you feel about the actual execution? They executed very well. I saw quarterback power. I saw quarterback lead. I saw quarterback G lead on the the tight red zone that led to Brendan Lewis's second rushing touchdown. I saw read option counter read option that gashed Arkansas, like the amount of different run schemes, I know that's sort of something that hasn't been talked about very heavily to this point, but there was a lot of differentiation in the run schemes, and it felt like that offense was ready when all of those plays were called. They were ready to execute.
Yeah, not everybody's offensive line nerds like we are, so they don't.
Right, really. Sure, yeah. Like maybe a lot of like what I just brought up probably sounds like a different language to some folks, but they ran a bunch of different plays.
Yeah, no, they absolutely did, and it, like I said, it was just a masterclass to use variations in your running game that you haven't used against inferior opponents. To bring that out against the best team that you're going to face all year and to execute it the way that they did is extremely impressive. But I do kind of want to pan out a little bit and look at the overarching theme, right? I know that's probably where we're going, but I'm just been fired up to talk about this because, like I said, I usually get this out of my system on Monday nights with you, but I haven't been able to. So now, you've heard people talk about Memphis has the best chance to make the playoffs out of the non Power Four schools, and what
I'm sure Memphis fans have been all over that ESPN Football Power Index page past couple of days.
Absolutely, absolutely, and rightfully so. And so now, I think the goal has to be upholding what you just did, right?
Yep.
Because so many times, especially at the collegiate level, we see the letdown games, right? And people are circling South Florida and Tulane as like the must-win games, but the matter of fact with it is, those are the games that the team's going to be up for.
Sure.
Those are the games that are going to decide the American and who goes to the championship game and potentially who is the 12th seed in the college football playoff. But it's these games that there's going to be 3,500 people at and terrible teams. That's what's going to matter because we've seen letdowns in Ryan Silverfield's tenure where they've been favored in a game and come out and laid an egg. And it feels like, at least right now, four games into the season, this is a different team that can't do that. And I understand, having that view of, if they go and beat Arkansas, they can beat anybody, and they can. But they have to keep this mentality throughout, whether they're playing South Florida towards the end of the year to decide who goes to the American Championship game, or they're playing one of the worst teams in the conferences on the road, and there's
at FAU this weekend. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. That's a great start. So it just now is about maintaining what you've built because you've built it up now. Like there's going to be talk and hype around you at this period in time. Now, obviously it can grow because yes, you just beat Arkansas, but we're only four games in and people aren't overly impressed by Arkansas, but you beat Tulane and South Florida and pick up some of these other wins and the ball really gets rolling, then you're going to be national talk, right? And Memphis is right now after this week, but it's going to continue for them to be in the national conversation because, yes, we can talk about the Oregons and the Penn States and the Georgias, but there's going to be a team that's in the playoff that's a non-Power Four school. And so that conversation is going to be happening weekly as we get closer and closer to December. So now it's maintaining.
And you're the bell of the ball right now, too. No one's saying a crossword about you.
No, you're in the same position that South Florida was in 2 weeks ago. Now, granted, South Florida has some good wins, and they really just got screwed by having to play the teams in a row that they had to play by. Beating Florida and then having to go play Miami is horrible. But they lose to Miami as they were expected to, and nobody's talking about them anymore.
Right.
It's like, that was a fun story for a couple weeks, but they couldn't keep it going. Memphis has every opportunity in the world to keep it going. I believe when you look at the FPI, they're favored in every game for the rest of the season. They get their most difficult matchups at home. Like, it is the perfect scenario for Memphis right now. And so now it's just about not screwing it up, right?
Which right.
Much easier said than done, because to now go win eight consecutive games and potentially a conference championship game is extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult to stay that locked in for that many weeks and not have a letdown and not have a slip up. But with the schedule that they've had, like, it looks like Memphis is going to have to run the table to be that team potentially. And you don't want to leave it up to a committee or to this factor or that factor or strength of schedule. Like, Memphis controls their own destiny completely now. Like, starting 4-0 obviously best case scenario, but now it's about just wiping the slate. Like, you got to wipe the slate. You can't be thinking about last week and we beat Arkansas and we're at the top of the mountain right now. You got to go grind it out and beat these lesser than teams to get to the ultimate goal, which, can we just for a second, and we can this for a few weeks afterwards, but how cool is it to see Memphis be the team that's projected to go to the playoffs?
Right.
I think it was like a 35% chance or something like that.
Yes.
It's incredible.
It actually improved to 36.6 last time I checked, percent chance.
And we saw this happen with Boise last year and how cool it was for Boise State to be one of the talks of college football. Now, it obviously helped that they had a Heisman contender and one of the best running backs we've ever seen at the college level with Ashton Jitzy. But still, like, to be in the driver's seat right now for Memphis, you could not be in a better position through 4 weeks.
All right. Now, I want to end this conversation in one way, and I've been trying to let Memphis fans in on my line of thinking, because Arkansas fans, there's been some complaints about the game, the Cortez-Bram push-off, which, let's be honest, it was a push-off. He was getting jostled with the majority of that route, maybe held a little bit, but he pushed off pretty heavily there at the end, and that was one of the biggest plays in the game. In my estimation, the biggest play of the game, because I know the difference between an 11-point or 18-point lead and 11-point lead once you get into halftime, especially when you get the ball coming out of the halftime break. So there's that. You have the punch out at the end. Lucky. People will tab that as lucky. Arrington Maiden, being able to just run through a 389-pound D tackle for 11 yards. Like, you look at all these things, and I see Memphis fans, when responding to Arkansas fans about them, they get defensive, right? Get a little bit defensive about it. And I'm here to tell Memphis fans, don't get defensive. Just chalk it up to Liberty Bowl voodoo. There's a reason that the last six times a Power Conference team has come into the Liberty Bowl, they've lost. Right? I look back at that Mississippi State game, the last game that they won against a Power Conference opponent at that stadium. You had a ridiculous – the biggest play in the game was that insane return where Mississippi State didn't down the ball and Calvin Austin takes it 90-some-odd yards. And then we realize after the game it shouldn't have counted because there were two fours on the field, number fours on the field, which is illegal, right? Like, at some point, stop being defensive about these things and just chalk it up to, hey, we got some voodoo in the stadium. You don't come in here and have it easy, right? Like, that's been my line of thinking with all the responses to what happened, what transpired on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, why not lean into it, right? I mean, can you hit Arkansas fans with all the defensive lines and say, you know, if you want to complain about this call or that call and you think you're so much of a better team than we are, then it shouldn't have come down to two or three calls or two or three moments.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, like, who cares? Lean into it. Lean into it and say, no, no Power Four school wants to come play here because crazy things happen. The ball bounces our way. When we're on national TV against a Power Conference school, weird things happen and we win the game. And that's kind of in the story. And now it kind of is like, is anybody else going to?
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up with you. Like, the next time this will happen, I don't know when that's going to be.
Yeah.
Teams, trust me, SEC, Big Ten, ACC, Big 12 teams, they see that 6-0 record since 2014 in the Liberty Bowl, and they're probably avoiding it at all costs. I mean, I understand it. And most of these conferences are going to nine conference games, and the ACC also went to nine games. They announced that you also have to play a Power Four opponent. So 10 of their games are against Power Four schools. Like, it just feels like Memphis is going to have to schedule how they can going forward. And a lot of that will be Group of Six, and a lot of that will be FCS, and that's just unfortunate in the out-of-conference. You want to have these big-time games for your home crowd, but until they get into a bigger conference, you just sort of have to deal with what's in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the exact point that I was going to go to, and that's that most of these conferences are going to a nine-game conference schedule. And when you've got to run that gauntlet, like you think about the SEC, and you have to play nine SEC teams in a year, you're probably not going to schedule a school that...
Yeah, what the hell do I look like scheduling Boise State or Memphis or USF or Tulane? Why would I do that? if I'm one of those schools. I would. Outside of the 10 games that I have to play against Power 4 competition, let me get a couple of FCS. If I'm a coach, I have contract requirements I need to meet. I have bonus requirements that I need to meet. So those extra wins mean something to them.
Yeah, it's like I've got to win games when I can. I've got to get the easy ones when I can now because I've got to play 9 games against a difficult conference, whether you're talking the SEC or Big Ten. Yeah, I'm not scheduling a team that can knock me off and upset me and potentially ruin my season before it really starts if it's earlier in the year. Like, it doesn't bode well for Memphis when you look at it from that perspective that, yes, they've been extremely successful, and that's great. It's much better, you know, them being 6-0 in their last 6 games against power opponents at home is much better than going, man, Memphis can't beat a power opponent. They're 1-5 in those games. But it also goes with, are they ever going to schedule us again? Is it, right. You know, they're not going to want to play you if they know that there's even an outside chance of you beating them. So it does kind of suck for Memphis to be in that position because there's nothing you can do to change it or fix it. You've taken care of business and done what you were supposed to. But now you have those bigger schools looking down and going, okay, I can hand pick some pretty easy teams to win, and Memphis is at the bottom of that list. Like, Memphis is one of the few teams that you're going to look at if you're a power school and as a non-power school and say, yeah, I'm not scheduling that team because they definitely have an opportunity to beat us and ruin our season. And, we don't want to do that.
All right, I lied. I have one more thing for you. The perception of Ryan Silverfield. You could take this nationally. I would like to focus more locally. After this win, 4-0 start, looking at where Memphis is at, how much have you seen – Or how much do you feel the perception has changed of Ryan as the head coach of this program?
Very much so. You look at just social media this past weekend and all the stuff that came out about Memphis, and you had I know you saw it as well, but the clip of Ryan talking to the team in the locker room after the win and just the responses that you saw on Twitter and Instagram of that, just, you know, how much people love Silverfield and, you know, just by the way that he talks to the team and about the team, how much buy-in there is from a completely new group of guys that are the majority of them are transfers. I think the perception is heavily changing or heavily changed at this point, at least right now at this point in time, because you just look at the reception after that win and it was like everybody was giving Ryan Silverfield flowers and everybody was talking about the great things that he's done, you know, at Memphis in general and specifically this year. So I know there's been some roller coaster fans.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
With Ryan that have been right there with him at times and that, you know, people that have called for his job. But right now, today where we sit, like he seems to be very popular and very right. loved by the fan base. So could that change again?
I mean, hell, it could change this weekend on the road at Florida Atlantic. We understand that.
Right. But where we are right now, like this is probably Ryan's highest approval rating of his career.
I think I agree with that. Well, Christian, I'll let you roll, man. Great stuff as always.
Yes, sir. See y'all back next week.
Yes, sir. He is Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Check out our podcast. It will release tomorrow. It usually releases on Tuesday, but tomorrow at 10 a.m., the On the Bluff podcast will release. We'll cover the Arkansas game and get you ready for next weekend, or this weekend, I should say, against Florida Atlantic. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll hop into the Blitz right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Gabe, Major League Baseball will now use the automated ball strike challenge system, ABS, during the entire 2026 season.
All right, so I have the ABS challenge rules in front of me. They are as follows. Each team will get two challenges and can keep them if they're successful. Challenges can only be initiated by a pitcher, catcher, or batter, and the request must come right after the pitch. To signal a challenge, the pitcher, catcher, or batter will tap his hat or helmet to let the umpire know. No help from the dugout or other players on the field is allowed. So this could get pretty interesting if a batter wants it and they feel as if that at bat doesn't matter all that much and he wants to use it to challenge. It could go bad for him once he gets back to the dugout. So that's something that's fun. But here's something I really don't like. In each extra inning, a team will be awarded a challenge if it has none remaining. So, like, if you get to the 10th, you get one. If you get to the 11th, you get one. If you get to the 12th, you get one. So they just redo it every single extra inning, which is wildly stupid. Just give them one or two four extras. Just probably one. I'm going to ask a very honest question and probably the obvious question here. If you have the ABS system, why don't you just implement that full-time? I know that umps would be against this. I know that they want to keep their jobs, all of that. But if you have an opportunity to get 100% of calls correct, why would you not just go and do that instead of just making it this challenge system? And because it kind of feels like they're slow walking it to a point where they may get to what I'm talking about. But they're doing this as a challenge system. I guess that's my question. Why not just implement it full-time, make 100% of the calls correct? Because I've talked about it on several occasions. I get very annoyed with home plate umpires because it can get bad at times. Joe West was terrible for years. Somehow we had to praise him when he retired. Angel Hernandez has been awful for God knows how long. I'm tired of seeing him back there calling balls and strikes. So, like, I guess that's my main question, Connor, is – if you're going to bring this technology to the major leagues, why not just use it and implement it fully and get every call correct?
Because it would take jobs away from people.
Okay.
I think that's probably the answer.
Okay.
If I had to guess. I think that umpires are a part of the sport. There is a place for them. And
even terrible umpires, huh?
Well,
even awful umpires.
Well, we're talking about one of many. I don't know the others' names, which means that they must be pretty good umpires.
Yeah,
you know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, even on a really bad night, they usually get about 92% of the calls right, balls and strikes. Like last night, there's an example going around of a guy during the Padres game. He missed 25 calls at the plate. He still got 92% of the calls right. It's pretty good. So it's just one of those things.
25, though, that's a lot.
Oh, over the course of
there is something to be said about, okay, if you have an umpire who is consistent, at least, right? He's going to give you at least an inch off the outside part of the plate against any given batter. As a pitcher, you take advantage of that, and as a batter, you know that that's how it's going to be called, so it's part of the game, I guess.
This may be a silly answer, and people may disagree with me, and that's fine, but I think that that's part of the game. Figuring out what the umpire's tendencies are, figuring out what his strike zone is going to be,
sure,
is part of the game for catchers, for pitchers, and for batters. And as long as it's going both ways, I usually don't have a huge issue with it, as long as they're being consistent for both teams and consistent with their calls. I don't want to take jobs away from people. I think that the ABS can be used in the sport. I like that you can challenge this now. I like that you have to trigger it automatically. It's got to be one of the three people involved. You can't get help from the dugout. It is going to be very funny to see the dumb baseball players out there be selfish and use it for their own at bat and not use it situationally. My huge issue with the announcement is the extra innings.
The extra innings
stuff.
Thing is
it's
ridiculous.
Silly. If you use all of your challenges during a 9-inning game, I don't think you should get an extra one in extra innings.
And you certainly shouldn't get one every single extra inning. That's ridiculous.
I find that ridiculous. It takes away the strategy of it. You know what I mean? And it's I think that having referees, having umpires, it is a part of sports. And yes, they miss calls. We can put guardrails in place in which you can challenge these things and you can try to get things as right as possible. And it seems like across most sports, that's what, you know, there's human error involved to some extent, but you are getting most of the calls right. I like that they're implementing this while not removing umpires completely.
We did talk about this before the show. There was, in spring training, they implemented this challenge system. Same rules, same everything. And on the pitches that were challenged, 52.2% were successful, the challenges. So
is that low?
I think that's kind of low, honestly.
Does that show, though, that maybe umpires are doing a pretty good job?
Maybe.
The biggest thing that...
If Angel Hernandez is calling a game 100% success rate.
Major League Baseball, one thing that they cited for implementing this new rule was it's going to help reduce ejections. 61% of all ejections have to do with balls and strikes. I think that was this season or last season that they're pulling those numbers from. So I think one of the main reasons they're doing this is it takes away ejections in huge moments.
And also, I think
that makes sense.
But also, I will say, I think umps have been pretty soft with some of them. Now, some of them are Kyle Schwarber throwing his helmet everywhere and going nuts and raging. So, like, some of them are called for. Some of them, I think, that umpires are just too soft.
I agree with
that. But, hey, we'll see how it works.
Huge news, Gabe.
Massive news.
Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer has suffered a thumb injury on his throwing hand and could miss 3 or more weeks. Oklahoma has announced John Mateer will undergo right thumb surgery tomorrow. Timeline unknown, but expected to return sometime this season.
So it's an open week, so I guess this is, I mean, if we're going into the schedule and saying when was the best time for this to happen, I guess during the open week, so he has a week to, you know, get back right, rehab that thumb, and get back on the field. Then they're going to have Kent State after that, but then it's Red River Showdown. Then they have to go and play Texas. So I doubt he will play. That's 2.5 weeks out from happening. So I doubt he will play in that game. This is massive for college football, and I think it hurts college football. John Mateer came into last week's slate of games as the second shortest odds to win the Heisman behind Carson Beck. That's where he was. So to lose a Heisman hopeful from a team that's number 7 in the country that has 2 top 25 wins at this point, that seems to be stepping in the right direction, that's hurtful. That's tough. And for Brent Venables, like, that's just bad luck. That's really bad luck. This is kind of a make or break year for him from the standpoint of will he be the Oklahoma coach long term? And through 4 games, looking pretty positively, now you lose a guy in John Mateer who has willed you to this point. And make no mistake, this is not just him throwing the ball. This is him running the ball. He has 43 rushes so far this year. He ran the ball 19 times against Michigan in that win. So this sucks. This sucks for Oklahoma. I think it sucks for the casual college football fan that likes to watch exciting quarterbacks. It's massive. Now, looking at it, he could return and they could still be solid down the stretch of the season. He may not play that Texas game. We'll see how Texas looks. If Arch Manning is peaking at the right time, Oklahoma may still be in that game if Michael Hawkins is playing, because we know that Brent Venables turned to him last year. Michael Hawkins has some experience, even though I don't think he's that great. He can use his legs a little bit, use his arm. I don't know if it fits the Ben Arbuckle system, their new offensive coordinator. He's more air raid, and Michael Hawkins is not an air raid quarterback in the slightest. I will say this was always a bit of a concern I had with John Mateer. just being honest with you. He's a guy who likes to make a lot of off-platform throws. He's a guy who likes to run the ball, put his head down, and finish runs. I mean, the big play from that Auburn game is him putting his head down and finishing a run, getting into the end zone. And maybe this is when that happened, right? Maybe this is that play is when he hurt his thumb. So this was always a concern, but it stinks for Oklahoma. Now, after all that, you know what my biggest takeaway was? Texas is really, really getting lucky. They're getting lucky. Now, you could say, okay, Arch has not panned out. That's unlucky. But I think that was always destined to happen. But you look at their schedule coming up. They have a bye week. Then they're going to have at Florida with a DJ Lagway, who I don't know if you watched him last week, Connor. He looks like he has lost all of his confidence that he came into the season with. Threw five picks against LSU, then threw for 60 yards last week in a loss. Then right after that, you're going to have Oklahoma likely with Michael Hawkins at quarterback. Then you follow that up at Kentucky and at Mississippi State. Like, the schedule for Texas is breaking right, even though they are not the type of team that we thought they would be coming into the season. So after all of that, you know, the tough news from Oklahoma wears off, that was where my brain went. Texas has caught some breaks. They catch a break with this news, no doubt about it.
Another thing I wanted to ask you was, because during the Auburn game and during the pregame, a lot of the conversation was, if John Mateer has a huge game against Auburn, he could be in the driver's seat for the Heisman. Is there a true Heisman favorite right now in college football? It feels like,
you know what, the books,
someone hasn't
really, you know what,
really
I saw
emerged
today on FanDuel Sportsbook? And you're going to love this.
Is it Dante Moore?
No.
Is it Joey?
No.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands, or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
I don't think you're going to get this. I'll give you two more guesses. I doubt you get this guy's name.
Okay, then I'm not going to guess.
Fernando Mendoza from Indiana is the favorite to win the Heisman.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing? Then Carson Beck right behind
After
that.
All of the conversation from last year, oh, Indiana shouldn't be here. Oh, Indiana.
And I told you yesterday, I think this Indiana team's even better than what they had last year.
I mean, they beat the living crap.
63-10 over the number 9 team in the country. Now, granted, Illinois I didn't think was actually worth a top 10 ranking. I think that was confirmation bias through the first couple of weeks because they won, and then people wanted to lift them up in the AP poll because of a good season last year, all that. But still, 63-10 against a team that probably is deserving of a top 25 ranking, pretty damn good. Pretty damn good, but Fernando Mendoza is the leader there. Dante Moore, I think, can absolutely come along. Carson Beck, I think, will be around there the entire time. We'll see what happens at Ohio State with Jeremiah Smith. If he continues to perform at a very high level, maybe he gets involved in this conversation. Ultimately, it goes to quarterbacks, though. And right now, isn't that amazing? The Indiana football quarterback is the leader in Heisman odds.
I love it. I love it.
To be honest with you, I do too.
Stop the count.
For real. Now that will do it for the Blitz. One more segment left in the day. We'll go ahead and rewind when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.